Welcome to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent documentary and foreign films, every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Pacific and online at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar. In the midst of a violent thunderstorm, soaking wet and seemingly shaken to her core, a young woman, played by Jordan Cowan, knocks at the door in an RV park looking for shelter and comfort. Patrick, played by Brendan Rock, is a strange and lonely resident who lives in one of the mobile homes. At first glance, she finds help in the care and concern shown to her, but soon that care transforms into curiosity and paranoia. The film is called You'll Never Find Me. We're joined today by the co-directors as well as co-writers, and that would be Josiah Allen and Indiana Bell. To both of you, welcome to Film School Radio.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks for having us. Great to talk
Thank
to you.
Thank you. My congratulations to both of you for a wonderfully told story. Not only is the story compelling and mysterious and leaves a lot to the imagination of the audience, but you were also able to maximize a very small set into something that felt much bigger and louder and just very appropriate to the story that you were trying to tell. What was the inspiration for this particular story, Indiana?
We came about this a bit of a strange way. Like normally previously with short films, it's been, you know, the idea for the script has come from a particular experience or a conversation with someone and an idea sparked and you've gone, oh, that'd make a great movie, and then go off and write it. Whereas this came about really differently. We were in America with a short film of ours that had gone to Austin Film Festival. So we were attending that festival with our short, and we saw a talk by the filmmaker Trey Edward Schultz. He was talking about how he had launched his career off of making a micro-budget feature film called Krisha. Yeah. And we're really inspired by it. We went home, we watched the film. We loved his methodology. We loved how he had not waited for an opportunity to come to him. He'd made his own opportunity and he'd kind of made his own feature off his own back. So we're really inspired by that. And we went, oh, maybe we could do this if we're really careful about how we write the script and what constraints we give ourselves. So we went, okay, we want to make a feature. We don't know what it is yet, but we know it's going to have to be quite a low budget. So what happens if we make a film that's set in a single location? And what if that single location is something that we can build so that we can really control the environment, but also get the most out of our shooting days so that we're not driving off, you know, on location and having things disrupted by weather and angry neighbors and all that kind of stuff. So a single location that we can build and control, and let's just have two actors in that location. And what can we create with that? Give ourselves these constraints in the script writing stage so that it really helps us in, you know, in our budget during production. And so we decided that we were talking about this while we were making another short film. And we were working with Brendan Rock and Jordan Cowan, who are two brilliant actors. We just loved working with them. We think they're super talented. We were able to develop a bit of a shorthand with them on set. And we thought, oh, we have these two great actors at our fingertips who have great chemistry on screen. Why don't we take these two guys and write a script around them and put them in that single location together and see what stories come out. So it was really kind of reverse engineered, and it was kind of like a creative writing exercise. One location, two characters. We've got a younger woman and an older man. What dynamics come out of that? What audience expectations are they going to be? And how can we subvert them? And how can we make it interesting? So it was really an unnatural process, but it was great from the perspective of once we had that idea and we had that script, it was custom built for us. It was custom built for these two actors, and it was really achievable on a lower budget. So that's kind of how it came about. It wasn't like a romantic creative story of like, oh, you know, I had this experience and it inspired this idea. It was really like a homework assignment kind of thing.
It was so good having this conversation about wanting to do a feature film while having just shot and then being in post-production on our previous short film, The Recordist, because we were just getting really good responses from people we were testing the short film on. on the kind of chemistry between Brendan and Jordan.
Mm.
And we made that short film day by day in a very similar way to how we did this film. So it was kind of ended up being an incidental proof of concept while we were making that, to then take that and bring that production methodology and those two actors over to a longer form project.
You mentioned Trey's work on Krisha, which is just a brilliant film. And what your film has in common with that is that powerful performances. I mean, in his film, she was amazing.
Yeah.
And in this film, they just do an incredibly good job. I had never seen Brendan before, and I thought he was all the things that I think you could have wanted. He has the ability to be menacing, but at the same time, he can be very kind of warm, but in a very subtle way. And then also Jordan did a wonderful job. Just both of them had to really run the gamut of emotions in this. Now, was horror or I guess you'd call it horror, was that always the genre that you were leaning towards as you were thinking about this, making this film?
We had always had a real passion and love for thrillers and psychological thrillers. But it was kind of like things started to lean more into the horror territory when, you know, it's just the perfect genre for lower budget filmmaking because in order for it to be effective, you don't need crazy expensive sequences and car chases and, you know, all those things that are kind of out of reach for first time filmmakers.
Yeah.
You can really, like, to me, horrors and thrillers are most effective when they're in a familiar environment and they're quite restrained. So it just felt like that was going to be, we're going to get the most bang for our buck going into that, leaning into that genre, because you can kind of turn all the lights off and shoot into a dark corner, you know, pair that with some really creepy sound and it can become extremely effective. Whereas, like if you spend $200,000 on an animatronic suit and film that, it might not actually be as scary as the dark corner with the sound. So yeah, it was kind of just about, you know, we really love this genre. We love watching it. And, you know, we had kind of dipped our toe into the psychological thriller realm with our previous short film and really loved doing that. And it was a mixture of that love and admiration for that genre, but also just the practicalities of what we could do with working in our budget.
We kind of always say, like, horror and thrillers, it's just kind of personifies what we love about cinema, which is it's got often in this day and age the best acting, the best writing. You get that character-driven drama piece, but it's wrapped up in all of the amazing cinematic tools we have to play with nowadays after 100 years of films, which often some of those tools are not found in straight dramas. They're used in bigger films, and we grew up watching, you know, bigger films with the crazy sound and dark cinematography. So it just, you get to wrap two worlds that we love together in horror and thriller. So it's just the funnest to play in.
I'm relatively new to my appreciation of horror films, of thrillers. I've been in straight drama or comedy, just generally speaking. I have stayed away from them because I grew up in an era when they were mostly slasher kind of movies. They were just, and I just didn't really appreciate, I didn't think they were of the caliber that I felt like I wanted to spend a lot of time with. But I will say, since I've become more and more familiar with this genre and more of a fan of it, one of the things I find about these kind of films, horror films, thrillers, ever, is that the audience goes in with an expectation that they're going to have to engage their imagination, going straight into it. You're going to have to start either suspend your the logic of some things, or but people seem to really lean into that idea as cinema lovers. I think horror lends itself to it's almost an act of participation in watching a horror film on the part of somebody who's sitting in the audience watching.
Yeah, 100%.
The other thing, and you mentioned it, the sound in this film and the cinematography and the angles that you shoot, and you're in a very cramped quarters. You get a lot out of that trailer. I mean, you must have really wrung that thing out, because you get just every inch of it, you know, really in you. It's a part of the film. It's obviously kind of a character in the film. Not kind of, it is a character in the film. And I just, as again, as filmmakers, I just really appreciate your ability to, you put in front of yourself something that you could really make use of. And just really appreciate that.
Thank you. Yeah, we did a lot in the script stage. We did a lot of storyboarding work just to work out kind of the best ways to use the space. That was the good thing about it being a set, was that we could kind of do the storyboards to those approximate dimensions. And that was just a good way. We were really conscious of not of wanting to keep the space interesting, but then use the space the most efficiently, but then at the same time not be self-conscious about being in one spot and constantly moving the camera for kind of no reason. So we worked out a lot of that stuff in the storyboarding process. And then we had an incredible cinematographer, Max Corkindale. And we really talked to him a lot about, you know, ways that we could change the space quite dramatically that would be really in line with where the story is going, just using lighting or sometimes simplifying the lighting and taking stuff away. And Max really jumped on that challenge, and he's got a real amazing knack for lighting spaces in different ways. And even when all the lights are on, in scene by scene, he would really give it a subtle shift. And I don't think an audience member would go, "Oh, I'm distracted by these shifts." They feel like you either don't notice or they're naturally occurring, but it allows us to kind of shoot multiple scenes in the same exact spot of a small trailer home, and they feel different each time and feel appropriate to what's happening dramatically.
Absolutely. Well, again, I talked about it earlier, but these two performers are able to bring so much subtlety. And the fact is that, and I'm not going to give anything away here, but there are shifts in tone, shifts in point of view, shifts in a lot of different areas of the storytelling here. And all of them are seamless in it. You just really did a great job of presenting other points of view, shall we say, in the film as we move forward. And that, especially as the story near the end of it, it really has to pivot in some ways. And I hope I'm not giving anything away here, but I think you did a great job with that. I think that is such an amazing, that really is a filmmaker's gift, is to be able to do what you did as that story draws to some, as we get near the finish line, if you will. Congratulations on that part of it as well.
Thank you so much.
It was a challenge. It definitely, I'd love to say we just went bam and just could do it, but it was a challenge, and it was a lot of work in the script stage. It was all there on the script, but then the kind of translation and adaption to making it, that was of course a whole nother step of a lot of experimentation. And then in the edit on this was we just had to keep testing the film on people and seeing what tracked. And then same with when we were doing the sound is so dense and helps us with so much of our storytelling and has so many of kind of the clues of what is going on. We started sound quite early on in the process. We were very much still editing while doing sound. There was definitely not a locked cut that we then went and did sound. The sound and the edit were really happening very simultaneously. Yeah, it was an ever-evolving process to get to where we landed. And we made the final edit adjustments, I'll just say, days before delivering to Tribeca. So it continued to shift and evolve based on testing it and showing people right into the last second.
Yeah.
Wow. It's a very tricky puzzle.
It worked. So congratulations to both of you. Yeah. I just want to let people know that You'll Never Find Me is streaming on Shudder. You can see it there beginning on March 22nd. And be looking for it, because it is truly beautifully done. 95%, 97% on Rotten Tomatoes as we speak. Congratulations. And what a great, you know, to go from short to feature film or right out of the gate, you've got something to build upon in your career. So I look forward to more from you. Again, the film, You'll Never Find Me. We've been talking to co-directors, writer, producers, editor, sound. Way to go. All of these things. And that would be Josiah Allen and Indiana Bell. Thank you so very much for your time today.
Thanks so much for having us.
It was great to talk to you. Thank you.
You've been listening to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent documentary and foreign films. You can find out more about the program at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next week with another edition of Film School Radio.